Right now, there are thousands of IT administrators out there just looking at their dashboards.
Yeah, probably feeling pretty secure too.
Right, because they're seeing mathematically verified, digitally signed software running exactly as intended.
Doing exactly what it was programmed to do.
Exactly. Well, you know, that exact same software quietly drops a back door directly into their system's memory.
It is a terrifying thought.
It really is. So welcome to today's deep dive. It is May 6, 2026, and we are stepping right into our Cyber Mornings daily mission.
Ready to get into it.
You know it. Our goal here is to deliver a high-impact cybersecurity briefing. We're pulling from a stack of fresh threat intelligence reports and security advisories today.
Specifically, we're looking at reports from Palo Alto Networks, Kaspersky, and VulnCheck.
Right, because we want to take the noise of the global threat landscape and just distill it down to the absolute must-know insights for you.
And we are filtering these three sources through a very specific lens today. We're looking at the evolution of the entry point.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, because when you analyze how systems are actually being breached right now, you start to see this stark shift away from traditional concepts of network defense.
Like the whole castle and moat idea.
Exactly. I mean,
Huh.
the idea of a hardened perimeter is largely a theoretical construct at this point. Attackers are finding wildly divergent paths into the heart of a network.
So it's not just about, you know, breaking down the front door anymore.
Right. And today's briefing highlights three distinct methodologies happening in the wild as we speak.
Okay, let's unpack this. We are actually starting with what happens when the perimeter defense itself becomes the weapon used against you.
Yeah, the Palo Alto situation.
Right. Palo Alto Networks just dropped this emergency advisory about a critical vulnerability in their PAN-OS software.
And this is tracked as CVE 2026-0300 for those keeping track.
Yep. And it's hitting PAN-OS version 12.1 on their PA series and VM series firewalls. The crux of it is, well, it's a buffer overflow vulnerability.
Which is an old school flaw, but still so damaging.
Completely. It allows for unauthenticated remote code execution with root privileges. But the specific condition here is that it only impacts firewalls configured to use the user ID authentication portal.
Yeah, the mechanics of this buffer overflow are what make it so incredibly dangerous.
Walk us through it.
So, in software architecture, memory is allocated in specific fixed size blocks. We call those buffers.
Right.
And the PAN-OS software handling requests to this authentication portal, it basically fails to properly validate the length of the data being sent to it.
It's just trusting whatever comes its way.
Exactly. So when an attacker sends a specially crafted, oversized packet of data to that portal, it overflows its assigned memory block.
And just spills over into adjacent memory space.
Yep, it overwrites whatever was sitting there, including executable code.
Wow. So, to put a visual on the mechanism here for you guys listening, imagine you have this highly secure building, right? And there's a bouncer at the front door checking
I
IDs.
like this analogy.
Thanks. So, if you hand that bouncer, like, a 10,000-page ID card, you aren't just giving him a fake ID, you are physically overwhelming him.
Right, you can't even process it.
Exactly. While his brain is struggling to process this massive overflowing stack of paper, his hands are full, he drops his master keys, and you simply walk right past him into the control room.
You completely bypass the logic check by breaking his capacity.
Yes. You overwhelmed his memory capacity. And in the case of this firewall, the attacker doesn't just get past the firewall. They get root privileges.
They own the whole thing.
Right. They own the routing tables, the traffic inspection, the VPN configurations. I mean, they own the gate itself.
That perfectly illustrates the functional breakdown.
Yeah.
The bouncer isn't tricked, the bouncer's incapacitated, and the system fails open.
It's just terrifying.
What's fascinating here is the nuance in the severity scoring. It really depends on how that portal is deployed on your network.
Yeah, let's talk about those CVSS scores.
So if your user ID authentication portal is exposed directly to the internet, meaning anyone on the globe can walk up and hand the bouncer that 10,000-page ID, this vulnerability carries a massive CVSS score of 9.3 out of 10.
So an absolute drop everything critical emergency.
Without a doubt. However, if access to that portal is restricted solely to trusted internal IP addresses, the severity drops to an 8.7.
Which means the immediate threat level is like entirely dependent on your specific network architecture.
Precisely.
And Palo Alto explicitly notes in their advisory that they are seeing limited exploitation already occurring in the wild.
Yeah, the attackers are not waiting around.
Not at all. They're actively scanning the IPv4 space, looking for those 9.3 situations where the portal is just facing the public street.
They are mapping the exposed attack surface, And this highlights a really brutal reality of the current vulnerability lifecycle.
The patching timeline.
Yes. Palo Alto has stated that patches won't begin to roll out until May 13th.
And we are sitting here on May 6th.
Right. That leaves a full 7-day window where the software running the firewall is fundamentally broken.
And literally no patch can save you right now.
Exactly. Which is a scary place for any admin to be.
Which brings us to the practical takeaway for you, the listener. Whether you're defending a massive enterprise or just trying to understand the defensive posture of your own organization.
What do they need to do?
If you operate PA series or VM series firewalls on PAN-OS 12.1, you just have to assume the code is vulnerable today. You cannot rely on a patch.
You have to change the architecture of your defense right now.
Yes. Restrict access to that user ID authentication portal to trusted zones only. If you do not absolutely require that portal for daily operations, disable it entirely until the patch drops. Cut off the pathway.
It forces a shift from passive reliance on vendor patches to active architectural defense.
Yeah.
You just have to remove the vulnerable component from the line of fire.
But, you know, at least with the Palo Alto flaw, we are still talking about an attack on a known perimeter. Like, you know the firewall is there, and you know you have to defend it.
It's a visible target.
Right. But what happens when the attacker doesn't need to break the perimeter at all? What if the operating system actively validates their entry and just invites them inside?
That is where things get really dark. We move from a broken perimeter to a poison supply chain.
Ah, yes. Story number two.
This is the Kaspersky Report, detailing a highly sophisticated attack against the Daemon tool software.
This one, man, it fundamentally breaks the way we think about software validation.
It really does.
So Kaspersky found that official Windows installers for Daemon tools, specifically versions 12.5.242 to 12.5.2434, they've been compromised.
And they have been serving up a malicious payload since April 8.
But the crazy part is these compromised installers were being distributed directly from the legitimate official Daemon tools website.
They didn't hack a mirror. They got the main source.
Right. And more importantly, they were signed with legitimate, mathematically valid digital certificates belonging to the developer, AVB DiskSoft.
Here's where we get to the core of it. The mechanism of a supply chain attack is designed to bypass every heuristic scanner and perimeter firewall you have.
Because you invited it in.
Exactly. The attackers didn't hack the end users. They compromised the build environment at the factory.
So the product was tainted before it even shipped.
Right. So when a user downloads that installer, the Windows operating system checks the digital certificate. It sees a valid cryptographic signature from a known publisher and essentially whitelists the installation.
The security tools literally stand down because the software carries the ultimate badge of trust.
Yep. The system says, you're good. Come on in.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Hang on. I'm stuck on something here. If the operating system checks the signature and sees it is mathematically valid, how does a defender even spot this?
It's incredibly difficult.
Right. I mean, our entire security model, the whole foundation of how networks operate at scale, is built on trusting those certificates.
It's the bedrock of digital trust.
So how can any IT administrator look at their network and feel secure if the mathematically good software is actually the malware?
It's arguably the most difficult question in modern security right now. And it requires moving away from implicit trust to continuous behavioral monitoring.
You have to watch what it does, not just who signed it.
Exactly. You have to look at what the software actually does after it's installed. Kaspersky identified that three specific tampered binaries were included in these official downloads.
What were they?
They were dthelper.exe, disksoftbusservicelite.exe, and dtshellhlp.exe. And the key here is these are binaries that run automatically during system startup.
Okay, so the user reboots their machine, the legitimate Daemon tools processes launch, and the infection chain just begins silently.
Exactly. And the execution chain is a masterclass in stealth.
Really? Yeah. How so?
Well, when one of these binaries launches, it reaches out to an external command and control server.
Yeah.
The domain is nv-check.daemontools.cc.
Oh, wow. Which looks incredibly legitimate if you are just glancing at DNS logs.
Yeah, it blends right into normal telemetry traffic.
You never look twice at that.
Never. And that domain was freshly registered by the attackers on March 27, showing clear premeditation.
They planned this whole thing out.
Yeah. The implant sends a standard HTTP GET request, and in return, it receives a command that executes silently in the background.
What's the command do?
It downloads a secondary file, nechk.exe, which serves a very specific purpose. Profiling.
Profiling the victim's machine.
Right. It gathers extensive intelligence about your specific system, what antivirus you are running, your network configuration, your domain status. It bundles all that data and sends it back to the attackers.
So they are essentially doing reconnaissance from inside the trusted perimeter.
Yep. They have a mole on the inside gathering intel.
And based on that intelligence, they decide whether to pull the trigger on the final payload.
Exactly. And the final payload involves two files dropped onto the system, cdg.exe and cdg.tmp.
Okay.
The first is a shellcode loader. Its only job is to read and decrypt the .tmp file, launching a minimalist backdoor directly into the machine's memory.
Into memory, bypassing the disk entirely.
Yes. It injects its payloads directly into legitimate Windows processes like notepad.exe.
Oh, man.
This technique, called process hollowing or memory injection, means the malicious code never touches the hard drive in an executable format, making it incredibly difficult for additional endpoint detection to spot.
It's basically a ghost in the machine. But, you know, the targeting logic here is what really stood out in the Kaspersky report.
Yeah, the filtering was intense.
It wasn't a smash and grab at all. They didn't just drop that memory resident backdoor onto every single machine that downloaded the software.
The funneling is extraordinary. Kaspersky observed several thousand infection attempts, meaning initial downloads of the compromised installer, across over 100 countries globally.
Just a huge blast radius.
Yeah, we are talking telemetry from Russia, Brazil, Germany, China. But out of those thousands of compromised downloads, that final critical backdoor payload was only delivered to about a dozen individual hosts.
Oh, a dozen out of thousands.
Yeah.
That requires an incredible level of discipline from the threat actors. They use that nvchk.exe profiling tool to aggressively filter their victim.
If you weren't on their list, the malware essentially went dormant.
So who was on the list?
They were looking for very specific intelligence targets. Those dozen hosts belong to retail, scientific, government, and manufacturing organizations localized specifically in Russia, Belarus, and Thailand.
That is extremely specific. And the funnel gets even narrower, right? Yeah. The report detailed that they deployed a very specific remote access Trojan, the QUEICRAT, against exactly one victim.
Just one.
A single educational institution located in Russia.
Yeah, and the use of QUICRAT is highly revealing about the technical sophistication of this group.
Why is that? What makes QUIC so special?
So QUIC is a modern transport protocol built on top of UDP. It's heavily used by services like Google to speed up web traffic.
Okay.
By tunneling their remote access Trojan through HTTP3 over QUIC, the attackers are blending their command and control traffic with the fastest growing, most common type of modern web traffic.
It's like hiding a sports car in a massive traffic jam of other sports cars.
Exactly. And many legacy firewalls struggle to deeply inspect UDP traffic the way they do TCP. It is incredibly noisy under the hood, but totally invisible to the user and highly evasive against older network sensors.
That is wild. The evidence in the code artifacts points to a Chinese-speaking adversary, but, I mean, their ultimate goal remains opaque.
We just don't know yet.
Right. Are we looking at highly targeted cyber espionage siphoning research from that Russian educational institution? Or are they establishing a beachhead for a massive ransomware deployment down the line?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the intent is the missing piece of the puzzle.
Mm.
But the fact remains that because this attack relied on implicit digital trust, it went entirely unnoticed for almost a month.
A whole month of persistence.
And this isn't an isolated incident. If we zoom out, Kaspersky notes, this is just the latest in a relentless string of software supply chain hits in the first half of 2026 alone.
Right. We saw the eScan compromise in January.
Yep. And Notepad++ targeted in February, CPU ID hit in April. The factory floor is completely under siege.
Which makes the practical takeaway for this briefing paramount. AVV DiskSoft has been notified and they are investigating, but look, as a defender, you cannot wait for the vendors all clear.
You have to act now.
Yes. If your organization uses daemon tools, you must immediately isolate any machines running those specific versions. You just have to assume compromise.
Run those internal security sweeps.
Exactly. You need to conduct deep internal sweeps looking for memory injection anomalies or unusual UDP traffic patterns just to see if that backdoor has spread laterally through your network. You simply cannot trust the software just because it carries a valid signature.
It requires a zero-trust mindset applied to your own internal supply chain. So we've seen attackers brute force a firewall by overwhelming its memory, and we've seen them poison the software supply chain to get invited right through the front door.
What's left?
Well, there is a third vector that is arguably the most frustrating for defenders, and that is the latent, forgotten integration.
Ah, the open window.
Exactly.
This is our third briefing today, pulling from a VulnCheck report regarding a critical flaw in MedInfo CMS.
Yeah, MedInfo is an open source content management system, and it's heavily utilized in the Asia Pacific region.
The VulnCheck report details a vulnerability tracked as CVE-2026-29014, and this impacts versions 7.9, 8.0, and 8.1.
And just to establish the baseline severity here, this vulnerability carries a CVSS score of 9.8 out of 10.
So near perfect.
Yeah, it is an unauthenticated PHP code injection flaw.
Okay, let's break down the mechanics of a PHP code injection for a second. It stems from a complete lack of input sanitization in a script used for the Wixen API, which is the backend integration for WeChat.
Right. When a web server processes PHP, it basically takes the code, interprets it, and executes the resulting actions.
Simple enough.
And input sanitization is the process of stripping away any executable commands from data provided by a user, ensuring it's treated strictly as text.
So they can't trick the server.
Exactly.
Right.
But in this MedInfo script, witsonreply.class.php, that sanitization step is just missing.
Oops.
So when an attacker sends a crafted request containing malicious PHP code, the server receives it, fails to neutralize it, and simply passes it to the PHP interpreter.
And the server just runs it.
The server executes the attacker's code as if it were its own legitimate instructions. The attacker instantly gains full remote control over the affected server without ever needing to bypass an authentication screen.
But the nuance here is fascinating, though. An attacker can't just throw this malicious code at any random MedInfo server, right?
No, specific conditions must be met.
Yeah. The server has to be running in a non-Windows environment. And crucially, the directory cache Wexen must already exist on the server.
Which is a very specific prerequisite.
Right. And that directory is only created when an administrator actively installs and configures the official WeChat plugin.
It's not there by default.
So what does this all mean? Think of it this way. It's essentially like leaving a spare key to your house hidden under a very specific doormat.
I love that.
You only put that doormat down when you install the WeChat integration. By simply trying to add functionality to your website to accommodate local business practices, you inadvertently mapped out the exact execution path the attacker needed to take over your server.
The vulnerability requires you to build the bridge for them.
Exactly. If the doormat isn't there, the exploit fails. Mm. But if it is, the window is wide open.
The attackers mapped the regional business requirements directly to the vulnerability. But, you know, this raises an important question. The most critical insight from the VulnCheck report isn't just the code mechanics.
What is it there?
It's the timeline of weaponization. It really illustrates a macro trend in the threat landscape. Look at the dates here. The maintainers of MedInfo actually released the patches for this vulnerability on April 7th, 2026.
So the fix was out there, publicly available.
The fix was available, but by April 25, just over 2 weeks later, security researchers observed the first automated probes hitting their honeypots.
2 weeks?
Yeah. The attackers had reverse engineered the patch, understood the vulnerability, wrote an automated exploit, and began testing the waters with small-scale scans targeting infrastructure in the U.S. and Singapore.
So they were just calibrating their tools.
Exactly. And then on May 1st, the floodgates opened. VulnCheck witnessed a massive surge in active widespread exploitation.
And they specifically targeted IP addresses in China and Hong Kong.
Which is a highly calculated move.
Because of a plugin, right?
Right. Of the roughly 2,000 online instances of MedInfo CMS, the vast majority are located in that specific region. The attackers knew exactly where the concentration of victims was.
And they knew that in the China and Hong Kong markets, the WeChat plugin, the prerequisite for the exploit, was highly likely to be installed.
They optimized their targeting for maximum return on investment.
And that timeline, that is the critical takeaway for our listeners today. The window between a patch being released and automated, widespread exploitation occurring in the wild, is shrinking to almost zero.
It's basically non-existent now.
In the past, an IT department might have had months to schedule downtime, test a patch in a staging environment, and, you know, roll it out across the enterprise.
Those days are long gone.
Today, you have days. In some cases, you have hours. If you are running MedInfo with that WeChat plugin, patching immediately is not an optional task. You can just push to the next sprint.
It's an emergency.
It is an active race against the clock. And the telemetry shows the attackers are already running.
The speed of weaponization dictates that patch management can no longer be a scheduled event. It really has to be an emergency response protocol.
It is a relentless pace. And it perfectly ties together the three distinct vectors we've explored in today's briefing.
Three very different ways in.
Exactly. First, we saw the failure of the perimeter. The unpatched Palo Alto firewall, where a buffer overflow physically overwhelms the system's memory, allowing attackers to bypass the gate and gain root access.
Right. If your portal is public, you are a target right now, and you have to restrict access until that patch arrives on May 13.
Second, we examined the trusted insider threat. The Daemon Tools supply chain attack, where official, mathematically verified installers were poisoned at the source.
Just to deliver highly targeted memory-resident backdoor payloads using evasive protocols like QIC RFD.
Yep. If you use Daemon Tools, you must assume compromise, isolate the machines, and sweep your network immediately.
And finally, we looked at the latent open window.
The MedInfo CMS vulnerability, where a lack of input sanitization in a regional WeChat plugin created a direct path for complete server takeover.
Really highlighting the brutal speed at which attackers reverse engineer patches and weaponize newly disclosed flaws.
Absolutely.
You know, by understanding the mechanics behind these three distinct methods, you are equipped to think like a modern defender.
That's the goal.
You aren't just looking at the high walls of your network perimeter anymore. You can look at your own digital footprint and ask the hard systemic questions.
Like, where is my architecture currently weak or unnecessarily exposed to the public internet?
Exactly. What trusted sign software am I running blindly, failing to monitor its actual behavior on the endpoint?
And what simple plugins, integrations, or legacy systems have I forgotten to update that are quietly waiting for an automated exploit to find them?
It requires a fundamental shift in perspective. You just have to assume breach, and you have to verify every action.
And that leads me to a final thought I want to leave you all with today.
Right.
We discussed the Daemon Tools supply chain compromise and this whole concept of digital trust.
It's a fragile thing.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
The foundation of the internet relies on digital certificates to prove that software is what it claims to be.
Right.
But if sophisticated threat actors can compromise the build environments of legitimate developers, mathematically signing their malware with the ultimate badge of trust.
Where does that leave us?
And if zero-day flaws can shatter our firewalls before patches are even written, are we moving toward a future where we simply cannot trust any software out of the box?
It's a paradigm shift.
If the digital wax seal is broken and the perimeter is an illusion, how exactly do we design the networks of tomorrow to keep the global economy functioning?
That is the million-dollar question.
It's a heavy question, but it's the reality of the landscape we're all trying to navigate and defend. Thank you so much for joining us for today's Cyber Mornings Daily Deep Dive.
Stay safe out there.
Take a hard look at your architecture, stay vigilant, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.